Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, co-founder and CEO of Employee Cycle, and you know us. We're your friendly HR analytics dashboard, helping you bring all your data together from all your different HR systems, HRIS, ATS, engagement, performance, all those different systems into one real-time, beautiful, centralized HR analytics dashboard. But that's enough about me and Employee Cycle, because today we have a very special guest. So I hope that you all help me welcome to the podcast, Amy Sperling, CEO and co-founder of Compt. And today we're going to discuss how to create and manage your employee perk program. Amy, welcome to the podcast.
I love it.
So, Amy, I have to ask you the question that we always use to start off the podcast, and that is, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Yeah, so I started my career kind of coming out of business school working in finance and HR. So a lot of my companies, there's usually an overlap or has been for a long time between those two departments. Finance obviously managing all the money, HR being the place where you're managing all of the entire team, which typically accounts for about 85% of the money spent in any given company. And so I've been working in HR and finance for longer than I care to admit, but a little over 20 years at this point.
Got it. And then can you give us a brief summary around what does Comp do?
Sure. So Compt is redesigning the way employee perks work so that they actually work for employees and for companies. The system that we have in place right now isn't really a system. It happened organically as companies tried to address needs within their employee groups. And what happened is that it's a bunch of disparate systems that have created kind of an administrative nightmare for HR and haven't really moved the needle on employee engagement. So instead of doing that, at Compt, we decided to redesign the whole system as if we could, you know, blue sky, create from scratch something that could really engage employees and work for the administrators. And so that's what we're building.
Awesome. So because you are in the space where you're trying to help companies have better perks and better perk programs, you must have seen some problem in the market. So what do you think most companies are now doing wrong when it comes to employee perks?
Sure. So I would say, I mean, I was doing all the things that other companies are doing now because there were just limited, there weren't software options to help solve this. So what I was doing in my prior companies was an employee would walk in and say, hey, I'd really love to have student loan forgiveness, or, you know, hey, I think yoga would be really cool. And you say, okay, yeah, that sounds like a reasonable thing. That sounds interesting. And you'd bring that type of a perk into your company because ultimately, you know, we know now, you know, the Department of Labor put out stats, 30% of employees' compensation is not salary. So 30% of their compensation is coming through benefits and perks these days. And that's across industry. You know, that's the entire U.S. It's a huge portion where employees want to have some interaction and engagement in that. And so what ended up happening was you bring in all these vendors. And before you know it, HR and finance become vendor management, scheduling yoga on Tuesday in conference room F and figuring out when you're going to get, you know, the gym reimbursements in. And what you end up seeing is that anything you bring in makes maybe 10% of your team happy, maybe 10% of the team is using it. But you're oftentimes paying for 100% of the team. So the costs keep escalating and your engagement doesn't go up. And so that was something that I was seeing as a repeat pattern within all of my companies. I'm sitting there saying no to my employees on a regular basis because they'd come up with a cool new idea, but I knew it wasn't going to impact everyone. And so the frustration level that, you know, employees really should be able to get what they need when they need it was something that I finally decided that it really needed to be solved, because that's how employees should be able to drive where their compensation is being spent and how it impacts them.
Awesome. And thanks for that. So one of the reasons why our listeners really love our podcast is because we try to make it as actionable as possible. So what I would like to do is now break the interview up into three sections, which is, as an HR people ops leader is listening to this, how do I create a strategy around my employee perk program? Once I do that, how do I actually execute on this? And then how do I measure to see if this is actually working or if I need to optimize it? Does that work for you?
Totally. I love it.
All right. So let's start with the strategy. How do I come up with an employee perk strategy? Do I perform surveys to see what people like so that I am reacting and getting feedback to what the employees want? And so I'm not doing this in a silo. Am I telling the employees what they should have? Is it a hybrid of both? What does this look like?
Yeah. And I think those are the two options that we've always had, right? So it's, you know, a lot of companies are doing employee surveys to say, hey, these are the benefits we offer. What do you like? What do you not like? What else would you like to see? And in my experience, what employees do is they check everything and then add five new things. So they don't want to give anything up, but they want to add new cool stuff for whatever the cool new thing in the market is. And so you don't get great feedback because you also don't get, do they use that yoga one time last year or are they using it every single month? So you're not getting the feedback you need to really design a program in traditional engagement surveys. I also don't love the scenario where HR is just telling everyone, hey, we've decided this year that what we're really going to support is X. Now, X could be something really cool like student loan forgiveness, but what if you don't have student loans? That doesn't impact you and suddenly you feel left out of this huge piece of compensation that's going out to some of the employees, but not all. So we actually think about it a little bit differently at Compt. We think that as the HR professionals and also just as the leadership team in general is take a step back and think, all right, what do we really want to achieve with our perks program? How do we want to support our employees and how do we want that to align with our culture? Because your perks certainly are not your culture, but they should absolutely reinforce the culture that you're trying to drive within your company. And so from that perspective, you can take a step back and say, all right, you know, we want to be inclusive. We want to support families. We think that health and wellness of our team is something that should be at our forefront. So thinking at it at a much different level without getting into the prescriptive level where you're saying, hey, we're going to go and we're going to do a gym stipend. So this is taking kind of a big step backwards from that and saying, all right, what do we actually want to craft here? What do we want? Behaviors do we want to drive within the team? And how do we want to think about how this relates to our culture and how we want to design things? So from a strategy perspective, I think that changes the conversation significantly within companies and then leaves the door wide open to really crafting something every single employee can be part of.
Should HR be doing this by themselves, or should this be a joint venture or a joint effort between HR and the rest of the C-suite?
I frequently see it as being part of a joint effort. I mean, your culture starts with the very top of your company. And so you need to have buy-in from the leadership team as to what your culture is about. If HR is saying, hey, we're a company that is, you know, where family is really important to us, but the folks at the top are not on board with that, you're going to have a disconnect and the employees are going to feel that. We typically see that HR is the one spearheading this project, but they're working in conjunction with the entire leadership team so that they have really a cohesive company-wide, very authentic strategy, which ultimately resonates really well with employees.
And with that being said, outside of your unique culture being a variable that you're optimizing for in regards to the types of perks you're providing, but are there any other variables or things you could keep in consideration? Industry type, company size, location, whether you're remote or non-remote, are there any other factors that you should be keeping in mind as well?
Some of that gets into the implementation. I think all of those factors should absolutely be accounted for, but that's more on the how you implement the solution. I think the other things that you could take into account are whether or not, so you certainly want to align with your culture, but are you trying to hire a bunch of people in the next year? Are you trying to retain folks? And do you have a retention issue? Do you have both? Do you have neither? So really trying to figure out what are you solving for, I think, is another piece of the puzzle when you're designing kind of your perks program, because they may, in implementation, it may look very different if you're trying to retain the folks you have or if you're trying to hire a lot of people or a diverse talent set, or maybe expanding into other markets, expand globally, looking at bringing on more of a remote team, any of those things, that should be part of kind of the factors that go into your program, but how you implement that is kind of the next phase.
And when you're creating your strategy, should a part of your strategy be to look at what either competitive companies are doing? And competitive can be framed by an actual competitor in the market and or a competitor that's trying to hire the same type of talent. So for instance, if you're Apple, maybe a talent competitor to you is Facebook or Google or LinkedIn. Should you be looking at what they're doing to outcompete them and have better, whatever better means to you? Or should you try to run your own race and just make sure that you're doing what's true to you?
Well, and again, it goes back to that culture piece. I mean, you can spend as much or as little money as you want. If you are, you know, using your example, if you're Apple and you're going to spend $5 per month on employee, but Facebook is going to spend $1,000 per month per employee, you're going to get smoked. But if you are, from a monetary perspective, and employees are going to see that. On the other side, though, most companies we find spend about the same amount of money on employee perks within kind of a range. So if it goes back to more of what type of culture are you trying to really reinforce? Because ultimately, employees are going to sign up for your culture, and much more so than they are if you offer the gym versus yoga, because that's the implementation part where you really let them design that. So instead of saying, here's the bucket of things you can do, you're saying, this is our culture and this is what we stand behind. We want to be a healthy work environment. We want to support families. We believe you should always be learning so that you can advance your career. Those are the types of things to put into your strategy. And then from there, deciding how you want to support the team, and that is kind of that implementation piece. So it's less about seeing, is Facebook adding the gym versus classes, and more about, all right, what culture do we want to build? And then we can get into the implementation piece on that.
And then last question about strategy. One of the things you mentioned was around thinking about things like being family oriented. And a lot of those data points, probably you might not have that already. So do you need to do an assessment to not necessarily ask people what they want, but to do an assessment around people's physical fitness goals or what they're into? And so sending out an assessment, for instance, saying, hey, do you work out? If so, how often? Or how you would like to work out? Is that valuable, or that's not really necessary?
It's not actually necessary. So taking family as an example, if a company decides that they want to be considered a family-based company, literally every single person has a family. How you define family may be entirely different, but every single person has somebody they consider family. That could be an aunt, that could be a parent, that could be a kid, that could be a friend network that's really your adoptive family. It's really up to the employee to determine who's in their family and what that means, and they can still be supported. So it's different from a traditional kind of vendor marketplace. Or comps is different from a traditional vendor marketplace, in that it's not this laundry list of, you know, now we have childcare and, elder care services, or home food delivery for families. We don't do that because we don't think that we design a better list of vendors than anyone else. What we want to get to is really allowing employees to design who's in their family, what that means to them, and still have the company support it.
Got it. So now let's move over to the execution side. I've done whatever I needed to do to truly understand what are my goals, what we're trying to do, and now I'm looking to execute. What does this look like? Where do I start?
So for companies that, I mean, there's definitely different ways you can approach this in the market. So one, you can say, hey, we want to be a family first company, and you can go and pilot a bunch of different types of vendors. You can go get an account with care.com. You could get on-site babysitting. You could do elder care. You could do all kinds of disparate vendors. That's one way to do it. It's time consuming. It's certainly not going to impact your entire team, and it's probably going to be pretty expensive. The way Compt works is that you say, hey, we want to be a family-friendly company. you decide your budget per employee per time period. So say it's $100 a month, for example's sake. You pick a category like family, but then every single person in your company, no matter where they're located, you know, whether they're remote or at headquarters or in another country, can then say, you know what, to me, family means I want to send flowers to my mother-in-law. To somebody else, maybe it means I'm going to get a babysitter for the night. Or for somebody, it could say, hey, you know what, I'm a pet parent, I want to get pet insurance. But as the employee, I get to decide what family means and decide how that money gets spent. In practice, what that means is they go spend the money, they upload a receipt, and they get reimbursed through payroll. So literally every single person can do something different every single time, and it scales infinitely.
Got it. And so now one of the questions I was asking about earlier, and you said it made more sense to discuss in execution, is really about looking at factors around multiple locations and having employees who are remote versus in-house and a hybrid of all three. And so to make sure that my remote employees or employees who work at smaller non-headquartered offices don't feel slighted and don't feel that they're not as valued because we have in-office snacks, and clearly they can't get the in-office snacks if they work remote from some random WeWork location. How do you handle that to make sure that, again, when it comes back down to culture, that everyone is a part of this culture and not just the people only in the headquarter or the office?
Well, and that's the beauty of Compt, and one of the things that we were designed to solve for, because I kept having that same issue. One of my companies that I was lucky to be part of, we were in 40 states and in 12 countries. So we had people everywhere, and we had about 1,000 employees. So you have all these people all over the place, but only the people in our Arizona location had access to the amazing chef that we had on site. Now, that's not a benefit that scales when you've got two people sitting in a remote office or somebody working from home. And that was pretty frustrating because they didn't get access to the same benefits. The way Compt works is that as a company, you decide what you want to support from a cultural perspective. And it can be multiple categories. You can say, hey, we've got student loan repayment, health and wellness, continuous learning, family, travel, whatever you want to put in there. But no matter where you're located, you get to decide how that money is spent because you get to go spend it and get reimbursed. So it accounts for everyone on your team in the same way. Now you can do different amounts of money for different groups, especially as you start crossing into different countries with different currency rates. But you can create a consistent culture where everyone has the same access, and it's far more inclusive for the team because it's not just, I'll use student loan repayment as an example. I think that's a phenomenal perk, but it doesn't impact everyone. Not everyone has student loan debt. And even if your team has it, if you work with a student loan forgiveness provider, a lot of times it only works if you individually have the debt. So it doesn't work for your spouse's debt or your child's debt. It only works for yours. So it doesn't impact your whole family. Whereas something like Compt, if you use that category, you just have to show proof of payment that you paid for someone's debt and you can be covered. So it creates a much broader base of benefits that can impact everyone.
Speaking of those benefits that are tailored to the culture and goals of your company, especially thinking around giving benefits that don't necessarily make sense for your type of employees, have you seen a big gap in between the types of perks that companies can and should provide based off of their industry, company size, location? So for instance, if you are mostly an hourly employee-based company, maybe retail, hospitality, franchise, and I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that maybe most of the people who are working in the stores may not have college degrees or student loan debt, just like you said, then that doesn't make sense. Are there other perks that you've seen people really over-optimizing for specific industries or company size?
What I see is that anything that you bring in impacts about 10% of your team. So I thought that was a great example for the more hourly workspace. Those folks may have student loan debt because they may be working, hourly so that they can cover those student loans. But they may prefer something that's more along the lines of continuous learning or family. And a lot of those folks don't have access to as rich of benefits. When you look at more of an office situation. So whether it's a law firm or a financial services firm or a tech company, that's where you see companies bringing in a lot of different types of benefits to try and reach that personalization. But it really doesn't matter whether it's food or gym reimbursements or student loan forgiveness or mental health is another big one that's kind of been on the forefront of a lot of folks' mind in the last year. You maybe 10% of your team will actually use that benefit. So it's a really expensive way to go if you're picking and choosing individual benefits. And that happens in little companies and it happens in big companies. So it's more a matter of, all right, every single person needs and wants something different. And that's hard to scale unless you use something like Compt.
Interesting. At the beginning of the interview, you threw out a stat, and I want to make sure that I'm repeating this correctly, but you said on average, about 30% of salary all in is coming from benefits and perks.
Yeah. So that's from the Department of Labor. They put that out. I think it's actually 31% of our compensation is non-salary, non-bonus now. Up from, I think it's like 6% in the 60s, in the 1960s. So a huge portion of compensation. Of course, health insurance is part of that and a sizable portion of that. But what's interesting is that even though health insurance is a big ticket item, it's not a move the needle item for a lot of employees. Companies either have a health insurance or they don't. What moves the needle on whether or not you join a company or leave a company ends up being those ancillary benefits. So whether or not a company is supporting your ongoing education or learning, or whether or not they're supporting your health, it's those types of things that really engage with the employee.
Since you've been working with different companies on creating and managing this strategy, have you seen any specific perks or category of perks that have provided higher ROI or that have really shown to really boost, maybe not productivity, but give employees the feeling that they're valued, that they're cared about their company over other perks? Or have you seen it pretty much the same across the board?
What's interesting is that most companies choose either health and wellness or continuous learning or some combination thereof as their anchor kind of perks, because those are the things that they want to focus on. A lot of our companies pick additional categories as well. And what we find is that it's the level of choice that drives the engagement much more so than the category that you select, because no matter what category you pick, employees can customize that and personalize it for themselves. So what we see is incredibly high engagement across the entire platform because the employees have the ability to personalize. On the other side, we see the companies really being able to create more culture-specific programs, thinking about whether they want to reinforce that continuous learning or health and wellness. That seems to be something that is consistent across companies.
Got it. Really interesting. And so now let's move over to the measurement and ROI side of things. So how are companies currently measuring this? And what do you think is the best practice to really measure how effective your employee perk program is? Is it by usage? Is it by retention? Is it case by case based off of the metrics that you're looking to improve? What does that look like?
Right now, I'd say it's a mess. If you're just working in the normal system, which is what's really interesting about employee cycle, is that you folks bring in so much data across disparate systems within kind of the perks category itself. I mean, if you were trying to decide, take a 100-person team and you've got yoga on Tuesday in one conference room and you do a gym stipend where people are submitting things right now through an expense report, and maybe doing $50 a month and maybe a cell phone stipend, there is almost no way to calculate without a lot of pain and suffering in HR and finance how many people are using it, which ones are using it on a regular basis, who uses their whole stipend, who doesn't, who actually showed up to yoga. I mean, it's almost impossible. No one has that data. They've got a sense, but they don't have hardcore data on that. And so that is something that we also wanted to solve for, because we believe you should have data around whether or not your team is engaging. And what we find and can calculate is what percentage of the team is engaging on a regular basis. So what percentage of the team is using some of their stipend, their lifestyle spending account through Compt. We can calculate how much of their money they're using through Compt. And what we find is that it's incredibly high engagement. So we've got a 98% employee account activation rate across our software, which is, you know, incredibly high. And we see that about 80% of the stipend money available is used on a regular basis by the employees. So virtually everyone is using some portion of their stipend. And then a bunch of the folks are using 100% of their stipend. So very different type of engagement metrics than companies are seeing when they put in place, you know, a yoga in the back office kind of concept.
That's awesome. And with the absence of this usage data, which we would actually love to track an employee cycle as well, what other areas of the, I guess, the employee cycle could you be tracking that could be just as meaningful?
I'm not sure I'm following.
So if you don't have the usage metrics to truly understand how often people are using all of the perks that you're providing and track whether or not people are using their stipend or not, does employee engagement serve as an alternative metric to be able to track to say, okay, well, employee engagement went up. We can't necessarily say that there was a correlation between the two, but maybe we add an additional employee engagement question around the perks just to see. I mean, that's what I'm trying to get at. Are there other areas that you can do to do the best you possibly can today unto that usage metrics, that usage data is available?
Sure. I think there's a couple ways. Like, I think employee engagement is still a really hard number for most companies to actually get. Like, what does that mean? How is that defined? And so we define it as the way employees are obviously engaging with their perks, and are they using their perks? If they're not using it, you shouldn't use our software. That's a, you know, not a good use of your funds. I think looking at your employee retention numbers is an interesting place to see whether or not your programs and your compensation and your overall culture are having an impact. If you see that you've got really high attrition and you're not keeping folks, or that you're keeping them, I mean, I certainly know companies that are struggling to keep folks, you know, more than 9 or 10 months. You have an issue there. It may not be certainly not just your compensation, but that could be part of it. It likely is also, there's other factors. So trying to diagnose that is something that is a great use of HR time versus trying to schedule yoga at Tuesday in a conference room. The other side of things is, can you fill all the roles that you have open? So there is not enough skilled labor to go around. Skilled meaning specialized skills. So that's everything from construction workers to engineers to, you know, accountants to lawyers, anybody with any specialized skill set. There's just not enough labor to go around. There's over 6 million jobs that are still open in our top 10 cities in the U.S. So a huge amount of jobs that are open that just aren't being filled. So if you are losing candidates to a competitor because of, you know, your compensation in any sort of fashion or your compensation package, that's something to be looking at as well.
Got it. And so now we're going to move to my favorite part of the podcast, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous. Are you ready?
All right.
Okay. The real question. Do you like to eat bread pudding? And if so, how do you like it made?
Oh, I love bread pudding, but I'm
yes.
But I can't eat gluten. And gluten-free bread is terrible.
Oh, are you?
So I cannot. Yeah. Not celiac, but not gluten-friendly. So if I had my choice, it would be banana bread pudding, though. That is, you know, when I really want to torture myself, I'll eat that.
Oh, no. All right. So the next question, the random question. If you had to choose one perk for yourself, for you to be able to use, which would be your favorite?
Mine would always go to travel. I like to see new places, see what different kinds of people are doing and eating and thinking. And so I always go to travel perks.
What does the travel perk look like?
For me, it could mean flights, could mean a hotel, could mean dinner in another country, could mean a guidebook so that I can plan my next trip.
Nice.
I mean, anything along those lines.
Got it. And then the ridiculous question, and I'm sure you come across this a lot. What do you think is one of the most ridiculous perks that a lot of companies are either offering now or are looking to offer?
offering now or looking to offer? I haven't heard of anything ridiculous that's the looking to offer. I think there's a lot of really interesting things that are being offered right now. I did see at a trade show of some sort, there was like, put your logo on fruit. That I don't think it's, I just don't think an employee is going to stay for that. I think it's a cool branding thing that you could do, but I don't know that I would buy that as an employee perk, because I don't know that my employees would stay employed if they have, you know, the Comped logo on an apple. So
yeah, we can, that's fine to put into the ridiculous category.
I think apples are great. I think fruit delivery is great. And I actually liked the branding on the apple from a marketing perspective, but as an employee perk, I don't know that that moves the needle for my team.
Got it. Well, Amy, thanks for answering all those questions and for being such an awesome podcast guest. Thanks for being on the Employee Cycle Podcast.
Woo!
Amy!
Thank you.
So where can people find you and Comped online?
So they can find Comped at www.compt.io. And they can find me at amy@compt.io.
All right. So for all of you listeners out there, if you enjoy this episode and learn so much like I did about creating and managing a strategy for employee perks, then please leave us a 5-star rating, because that shows that you care and that we're providing great content. Also, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, and that's because you're already a super fan of Amy, or you just saw this topic and you just thought it was so compelling that you needed to listen, but now you're hungry for more awesome HR podcasts, then please subscribe to the Employee Cycle Podcast at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast player you're using. And last but not least, all of you HR and people ops leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.
This episode of the Employee Cycle Podcast was edited and produced by Lux Podcast Production. Lux is a creative audio suite that helps clients create, market, and measure their show. Visit luxpodcasts.com to learn how a podcast can benefit your organization. That's LUXE podcasts.com.